Good morning, sir. Please just hold on, and we'll be right with you. I believe that the Honorable Mr. Rittenhouse is willing to conduct the hearing, sir. So you can just hold on, we'll be ready to get started.
Okay, Mr. Dogwish?
Yeah, well, okay.
Yes.
We need to make a phone call and get someone on the line. So if you can hold on just a moment while we do that, and then we'll start your hearing. So just sit tight there.
I think I have that one, Mr. Johnson.
I got it.
Brandy Thomas?
Yeah.
Hi, this is the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. We understand that you wanted to participate in the hearing of Mr. Alexander Douglas.
Yeah.
Okay. Mrs. Rittenhouse will be conducting a hearing. If you just stand by on the phone, she will get with you at the time for you to make your comments. Okay, but please just stand by on the phone.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Okay, back to you, Mr. Dogwish. Could we please start by having you state your full name and your ADC number for the record?
I'm Alexander Dogwish. ADC number 042400.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a hearing that would you'd be eligible for general parole, which is 412A, home arrest or absolute discharge today, and you became eligible for these on March 31st, 2005. I'd like to introduce you to the board. If you look to your right, to my left, all the way at the far end is the Honorable Louis Quinones. Next to him, the Honorable David Neal. Right next to me here in the middle is our board chairman, the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright. Over on my other side here is the Honorable Michael Johnson. And my name is Gail Rittenhouse. I'll conduct your hearing today. I'll start with just a brief summary, sir, and I'll ask you to correct me if I've got anything wrong in this. Looks like you are 66. Are you 66 now, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And you're serving a life sentence for the crime of murder in the first degree, and that occurred on April 1st of 1980. And were you about 27 when that happened?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And you were convicted by a jury trial on November 4th, 1980, and sentenced on December 2nd, 1980. Did you appeal your conviction, sir?
Yes.
You did appeal, and what was the result of that? I don't know if you have that. So they upheld the conviction then, in your appeal. Okay. All right. excuse me. I'm batting a little bit of a cough here today. It looks like you didn't have a whole lot of criminal history that I've been able to see. You had some, it looks like you got in trouble a little bit as a juvenile for joyriding and things like that. And then in 1975, you had a conspiracy to distribute heroin, and in 1980, a marijuana possession. But other than those, sir, do you recall any other criminal history?
Mm-hmm.
Just the instant offense.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Okay, then it also looks like I just reviewed your prison record, and it looks like you've had 20 majors. You've been in prison for quite some time, so that's probably, I'd say, about average, maybe a little above average for the number of major discipline. But you haven't had one for quite a while. It looks like your last discipline was in March of 2012. And that was a positive or refusal to submit a urine specimen. That was a major. So do you remember what that was about?
It was showing after I got back to prison for a year.
Okay. So,
and I'm going to have a full investment
Mr. Dalglish, I'm going to ask you just to speak up just a little bit, because we're having a hard time, or speak right into the phone. I'm just a hard time. You have a very soft voice.
I'm sorry. Is this a little better?
It's a little bit better, yeah.
Okay. After I came back to prison on violation for building the village, I got high again, given the rest of the dealt with my broken shell. So that's when I quit. And when I came to 30 ways to the board, moving the ways. And anyway, I said, I was going to be broken inside of that. And
okay. And that's the last time you used drugs, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yeah, and before that, it looks like you had a minor in 2009 for disobeying an order. And that, I don't know if you remember specifically, but that could be just about anything.
She was possession of a single ID.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, and just scanning the record, the official record, it looks like you had a kind of a pattern or history in prison of using opiates. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Okay, and that's kind of been over the years that you were in prison. Okay. But you're saying in 2012, that was the last time you used?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, congratulations on that. How do you feel?
At first, when I was received the DUA, the very day, I knew I had to get up and keep coming to the front of the door, expecting my degree if I'm still using. So it was about 2 years before I really started dealing with my brokenness. During those 2 years, it was kind of unpleasant because I wanted to be with you. But since then, dealing with my brokenness in multiple ways of programming, I've got peace of mind about the situation.
And physically, it's drugs are really hard on your body. How does your body feel?
It's suffered through all those years.
So, have you been attending NA or AA or any sort of drug treatment?
Yes, ma'am. I'm actually now almost complete with the recovery support specialist classes. It was a drug use, the government sent the drug abuse initiated for 1 year, the drug abuse. Isn't that kind of an issue? Just another angle to look at your level.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
So, anything at the first program, so they work with schools, so they go back to the value of problem, the selfishness, and kind of how long you really look at that way. They're all contributing.
Okay. And they're all good in support of kind of helping you to helping you to realize what happened, you know, how you wound up using the drugs. Okay, so it looks like now you've had several hearings before the board, more than 25 hearings before this board, and on a couple of occasions you've had home arrest and then parole granted in 2006. And then you were revoked in 2009. And then another occasion when home arrest granted again in 2010, and you wound up getting revoked in 2011. So what happened? What happened on those occasions? What happened in 2009? Where'd you get revoked?
2009 was not good. I had just been relieved and not wanting to come out of my comfort zone, I used drugs again and ended up walking away from alcohol.
So you were out for 3 years in that time, from February of 06 to October of 09, so 3.5 years.
Well, Excuse me, that was the first time. Almost 4 years.
Okay, now, so that was the first time that you were out for the long period of time. Then the second time was about a year. It looks like you made it almost a year. And that was the one where you used again?
Well, I'm thinking it was a five-week meeting here, but this whole one that exists, I was up for 4 years, and I came back for 2 years, and then
Mr. Douglas, if what would you say to this board, if the board were to release you again? What's going to be different this time?
Well, first off, I jumped extensively through programming here to find out why I keep wanting to lose. I told you all the theories of the first 3 years when I got out, I knew I had to stay clean, but I had to address the issues, so it was somewhat uncomfortable. I can say I didn't have a good reputation, but I stayed pretty clean for those years, and then after so much time, I met some people that were on my call to include a girl, and they said, well, no, I'm using them. And it's easy for me to want to back in. Since the agreement I got upon arriving back on this lady's violation, I was told that I would have to go because I couldn't get in the way of the board expecting me to leave. And so for a few years before I really delved into the false step program and everything else that's in the it was painful for me. It was uncomfortable. But now that I've actually looked at all these issues that may be the drug and personal drugs and medical, it goes without saying that I was extremely connected because I'm always at risk. So I was taking up with the car set up as I wouldn't be released to chairs on the street. I would say that indefinitely it would be that discipline structure problem.
And have you received an acceptance letter from Church on the Street?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and we may have it in this packet. It's just, it's a large packet that we have. All right, let me page through here. I'm fairly certain that I saw some things like that. I see some certificates that you have completed some programming. Yep, I just got to it, just as you said that. I see it right here. And it's dated March 28th, 2018. So that's still, you know, still recent enough that you've been accepted. Do you have a job skills, sir? A particular job skills?
Yes, ma'am. I'm a license supporter.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
I have an employment grade from where I used to work. But I can tell you.
Well, hair continues to grow, so that's a good skill to have, sir. I am going to, let's see. Oh, I do want you to tell us what happened the day of the crime. Because, you know, we can read the official record, but I'd like to hear from you. What happened that day?
I shot a friend of mine, John Lee Merrick, for the last solely and lonely reason, and devastated for these two families in the process.
So, Mr. Dolvish, what led to it? Why did you, what brought you to that point?
Well, it was the whole deal on that. It's been all done for me.
Oh, okay. Where did you get the gun? Did you have it for protection, or was it like a collection, or why did you have the gun? So, had you been in the military, would you say?
Yes, ma'am.
Which branch?
Marines.
You were in the Marines? Okay. And when were you in the Marines?
From 69 to 72.
And was that around drugs too?
Mostly when I insured, because I was not in California, I was in the military where I found the island, and so it was all the way since then.
Okay, sir, thank you for that. I'm going to see if my fellow board members have questions for you. Mr. Johnson has a question for you, sir.
Sir, when you were previously released, you continually, as you were talking to Ms. Rittenhouse, you continually used a statement that it was out of your comfort zone, you was uncomfortable, and it was painful when you were out. So what made it so uncomfortable and put you out of your comfort zone that caused you to go back and do drugs while you were out those other times, the last time?
Well, not having grown up and addressed my brokenness, my lack of confidence and feeling like failures, it's really easy for me to deal with people when I'm in my comfort zone or on hell. And it's something that I haven't addressed yet, so I kept resorting back to it.
So, do you have any family or friends here in Phoenix, Arizona, sir?
Yes, sir. Well, my immediate family, my sister lives in Oregon, but I have some good friends in Phoenix.
Okay.
Martin Jones and Tom Webb are two of them, and they should be with you.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Any other questions from board members? Okay, Mr. Dolvish, you do have some visitors here, some supporters. We have Tom Good and Martin Jones here, and we also have someone signed in, Laura Raymond, and are you a supporter?
Victim.
Okay. All right. Then I think with your permission, oh, we also have the prosecutor, Mr. Douglas, we have the prosecutor here to testify. So I think we'll start by having your supporters come up, if you'd like to.
Good
Good morning, sir. Welcome.
Good morning. My name is Martin Jones.
Thank you.
I have a little document to give you that was supposed to have been mailed to Alex, but it didn't get mailed, and this is a transcript of a course he took, some type of a Ministry for Prisoners course.
Okay, and do you have a copy of it? Because we'll have to keep it.
Right.
You can give us that? Thank you. We'll make a copy for this. This will go in the permanent file. Thank you, sir. Now, what would you like to tell the board?
It's going to do a little bit of a recap of maybe some things I've told you in the past, and I've been coming to these hearings for quite a while. You know, Alex, when he was first released, the first time he stayed at my house for about a year and a half under house arrest. You know, I just want to reaffirm that, you know, he did real well. We had no concern about Alex at our house with our kids or grandkids. And of course, then Alex got his driver's license and went to work. I brought in a letter last time from his former employer saying that he was a good employee and that he was trusted, that he had a key to the shop and he was able to come and go as he pleased. Of course, then things went south and here he is, where he is now. But in the past, I told you some stories about, people I knew that had drug problems, that, and especially one gentleman's father that took 40 years to clean up from alcohol. And I believe that Alex has finally done it. It took him a long time, but he's done it. And I've spoken with some of the CO3s, and they believe in the change that's come about for Alex. And, I talk to Alex once a week, twice a week, and I see a huge, huge difference in his just ability to speak about what he's doing, and I feel a real positive change in him. Now, just because he's really delved into the scriptures and into religion, and that's not the cure-all for everything, but he's done it. And we talk about religion, even though I'm not a church goer. He still wants to talk to me about religion when we speak on the phone, and he's very in depth and knowledgeable. And I write down the things he says, and I go back and I check up on him, and it's exactly chapter verse and. And so he's really delved into it. I think at this point, I want to just let you know that I believe 100% that he's ready for release. He, like I said, he's made a lot of improvement, and I 100% can support him.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Jones? No? Thank you, sir. Okay, Mr. Good.
Hi, my name is Tom Gooden. I've been a friend of Alex's since high school, and on the last time that he was released, I have an apartment that's kind of part of my house, where I subdivided my house, and he lived there for, I can't remember exactly how long he lived there, but at least 6 months, and he just was a great person, and he had a job as a barber, so he had a lot of things going for him. And I know that, he messed up, but I just feel that he, like Martin said, he's changed. He's finally gotten over the hump of the drug problems, and he's also tried to make himself better spiritually. And, he has community support, and the fact that the barber guy that he worked for is like a friend. And then he has Martin and I, and a lot of our friends that we grew up with in high school, we're still all friends. So, And then there's church on the street where, he can get involved in that program to become even stronger and better and help other people. So I just think that, he's ready to get out and would just hope that you would see it that way.
So, Mr. Good, you said you believe he's changed with respect to his drug use. Is there anything specific you can think of that would be different now about him than last time? What's different, especially about the drug?
Well, just the fact that he hasn't used in prison is one thing. I mean, that's not easy when you're in a situation like that, for him to go this long without using and everything. And you can just tell that, he's changed. And that's what it is,
Okay. All right. Any other questions for Mr. Wood? All right. Thank you very much for coming today. Okay. And I can... Ask this, and we'll just share this thank you for bringing the document to it. We will add that to the file. Okay. So now I'd like to give an opportunity for, for Ms. Thomas on the phone.
Yeah.
Ms. Thomas, what would you like to share with the board?
Well, my name is Brandy Thomas. I am the niece of the victim of his original crime. And I was present at the property where my uncle was murdered, along with my brother. At the time, I was 6 years old. My brother was seven. And Mr. Dalglish hunted him down like an animal, followed him to pick my brother and I up from our babysitter. And in his original release, when he went up to ask to have his monitor removed, our family offered our forgiveness, and we agreed that he deserved a second chance. And at this time, I don't agree he deserves a fourth, fifth, sixth chance. He's proven that he's not fit to live outside of prison, in my opinion. He took the life of a 21-year-old father of two, and still the family offered him forgiveness, and he still proved to us that he hadn't changed and that he can't fight his demons, and that, that's just where I stand this day. I feel that he's been given chance after chance and opportunity to do better. I asked him on the steps of your facility and gave him a hug and asked him to just, you know, do good things with your life. Go out there and prove me wrong. I tell my kids all the time, prove me wrong. Because that's what I wanted to see for his life. I wanted to see him turn it around. And then some of the things that the altercation he got into over a jack at a yard sale, and I felt like, wow, you know, I agreed to this, not that my word is what keeps him in there or releases him, but I felt responsible for his actions and for him being on the street and being in the situations he was in, and other people being in the situations he was putting them in. So I just don't think that he should be given another chance to possibly do something wrong. And that's about it.
Okay, Ms. Thomas. And I do want to note, Ms. Thomas, that we have your letter attached. We have a letter. There's no date on it in particular, but it's about a two-thirds of a page, and it's single-spaced. So it's quite a good explanation, essentially, of what you just told us, plus you added a little bit more today. So thank you for that, and thank you for participating in this hearing.
Thank you.
I'd like to go to Ms. Raymond. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you for having me.
And please state your name for the record.
Laura Raymond.
Thank you.
I am the victim's step-niece. I think my sister covered a lot of it. We did stand outside these steps many years ago and asked him, please just follow what you're supposed to do. And we believed him. We believed that he was going to take the second chance he was given and not return. Unfortunately, he did. And he recommitted several times with drugs and assault. The same situation that brought us here in the first place. I think when Governor Ducey said he believed that every individual in our prison system deserves a second chance, I think originally he did mean somebody like Alex Dalglish. But unfortunately, I think when he said second chance, he didn't go on to say thirds, fourths, fifths. I don't think he meant that families should have to relive this every 6 months, have to hear the same comment from Mr. Dalglish that he killed his friend. Johnny was not his friend, because as you and I know, when we have disagreements with our friends, or if a friend steals from us, we wouldn't go out and kill them and commit a crime. We wouldn't, after we've been given second chances, go out to a yard sale, purchase a $2 item, and if it didn't work, go back to that individual's home and assault them. Mr. Danlish, before this incident with Johnny, had previous charges, I believe, and maybe the prosecutor will be able to go over them with you, that included drugs and weapons. He has a pattern. It's not going to change if you let him out this time, the next time, or the time after that. He has proven while he was in prison for 19 years of his 25 life sentence that he wasn't going to follow the rules. He was going to be part of various hate crime groups, doing drugs and assaulting. I don't think that his words today are going to change that. I don't think you releasing him will change that. I think we will be back here again. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Thomas. Any questions now? Thank you. All right. I'd like to ask the prosecutor to come up. Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Yes, please state your full name.
My name is Kirsten Collinsville. I work for the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. I'm the Assistant Bureau Chief of the Capital Litigation Unit. I am here to speak on behalf of our office regarding Mr. Dalwish. The thing about this individual that stands out, as you originally pointed out, he's had 20 major violations, but he had 71 infractions over the years that he was in custody. When you all or other people in your position allowed him to have an opportunity to prove himself before, when he was out the first time, he violated his parole first, and then he absconded. He absconded, and when they were able to get him back, then he was returned to custody on April 30th of 2009. He was again granted home arrest, and this time he couldn't even make it a year before he violated again. So he's been given at least two opportunities to prove himself that he's changed, that he's going to be different. And what you heard is that he returned to the exact same lifestyle that is tied to the underlying offense here. Him and his friends gave the victim money to go buy some drugs, and the victim did not return, so they assumed they had been ripped off. And just as the victim on the telephone pointed out, he did not only go hunt Mr. Dalwish down, but once he got to the home, he chased him around the home with the .45 and shot him. It wasn't an accident. You know, he chased him down. He told the jury that it wasn't self-defense. The jury didn't believe him. The Court of Appeals didn't believe him. He served his time. He was given a chance to prove that he had changed. He showed he did not. He went back to the same lifestyle that caused this victim to die. He was given yet another chance, and he went back to that same lifestyle. So at this time, to protect the community, the state is asking that you allow him to remain where he's at and continue to serve the sentence. And whatever positive changes that he's made, maybe he can continue to make that positive impact from where he's at. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the prosecutor?
Sorry. Can I say something really quick?
Please just restate your name.
Brandy Thomas.
Thank you. And what would you like to say?
I just wanted to make a correction. She said that he chased Mr. Dalwish around. I just want to make it clear that Mr. Dalwish chased John Romero around before he shot him.
I apologize, Ms. Kirsten Valenzuela. Again, I think you misunderstood me. I was saying Mr. Dalwish chased the victim around the home.
Oh, okay.
I can't hear real. Yeah, it may have been confusion with he chased him, and we just had to clarify who was the he in this case.
Yes.
So thank you for pointing that out, though. Okay, Mr. Dalwish, we're coming up toward the end of your hearing, and I want to give you the opportunity to make a final statement, sir, if you have thought of anything else that you would like to tell the board before the board goes into deliberation. Is there anything else, sir?
Well, I know what the record reflects, and I'm not aware of the kind of just basically common danger. But I will point out that the grass is not broken in this family. There's no way to live with that. Just please God or anyone else. they were jumped in the line. Another part of my program, which you might want to look in, is to stay in the 12-step program, stay in the church ministry, and to have that discipline structure in my life. And avail myself of mental health services to ensure that I don't abuse them, because I'm at peace with whatever happens, but I know that peace is what's going to keep me on the straight and narrow. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Douglas, thank you. The board is going to go into discussion, and we just ask that you remain on the phone and just remain silent, and we'll be back with you in just a moment, sir. Okay, the board is now in discussion. And Mr. Douglas sounds like he's definitely made a decision to change. I think he has realized the effect, the impact, and the depth of the impact that drugs has had on his life. Pretty much acknowledges that all of his crimes, including all the way back from 1975, 1980, to the present, I mean, and including up to 2012, revolved around drugs. His whole life revolved around drugs. I think he has a lot of support in his friends that are here today that would be very good support for him. And unfortunately, they can't be with him 24/7. I think he's on the right track with sticking with the AA and the NA programs. But I'm not hearing what has changed. What about him has changed that would not allow him to, that would prevent him from re-offending and getting involved in the drugs again? I'm just not hearing it. But I'd like to just start the discussion with that. And Mr. Johnson?
I kind of agree with Charles. A little bit uncomfortable with some of the statements he was making about being out of his comfort zone and uncomfortable, and that it was just painful when he was out, which gave me some concern. But I did hear him earlier, if I heard right, and he talked about the classes that he attended, and that the classes that he attended more recent over the last years were classes that taught him more about helping him understand what his reasons why and what some of the triggers are that causes some problems when he was out and people from going back. So that's just
okay. Mr. Quinones?
Thank you. As always, we have some serious responsibilities on behalf of the people of Arizona, and I think Mr. Douglas has broken trust with the community with his past behavior during previous periods of supervised release. Although I do commend him for pursuing a sober lifestyle inside the Department of Corrections. And I'll just continue the discussion from there.
Mr. Neal?
Well, yeah, on the releases, the victim side expressed many chances, more than one chance, and even with what they said about drug reducing, what I think is somewhat overlooked in this one today is he's been released three times, technically. Because he was released, he was arrested for assault, he was violated, came to this board, different members, but the board, and they took faith in what he said at that time. And we turned him out to, I think he was on regular parole at that time, and he went back to his drugs. and then he ended up getting arrested or violated another time. On that thing, it was an original release, but it was twice he was released, and then the third time. And I don't hear, in talking to him, I don't hear the conviction in his statements that I would be comfortable with any kind of a return to the community at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Law. Mr. Pinones?
Just a little follow-up, and that is, in our discussion, I did want to take the time to say that I really admire the character of the victims' representatives. They were a strong reminder of the responsibility that we have. Thank you.
And Dr. Wright?
Well, I've been with my colleagues, and I think that we've heard, well, I've heard from him, I believe, on 8 different occasions, and I see no reason to release him at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. I'm going to make a motion then, and my motion will be that we deny a general parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest, and that based on the date of the crime, that we ask for a 1-year set off. And that would be my motion, and we'll go over reasons for denial.
Second?
Agreed.
Agreed.
Okay. Motion by myself, seconded. Mr. Neal, agreed. Dr. Wright, Mr. Quinones, Mr. Johnson?
Agreed.
Thank you. And the reasons for denial, serious and violent offense, loss of human life, trauma to the victim, serious bodily injury. I'm going to say victim harassment because of being chased around before he actually shot the victim. History of continued substance abuse. I'm not going to check poor institutional behavior or recent disciplinary because he really has changed his behavior. And I'm not going to do lack of programming because he is continuing to participate in AA and NA, which I think he needs to continue. And he has family and community support, or at least community support, and I will not check any others unless board members deem that important. Okay. All right. Back to you, Mr. Dogwish. The board has voted unanimously to deny your parole, sir. You heard the reasons for denial, sir, and did you have any questions or anything else you wanted to add, sir?
Well, since you've given me the opportunity to ask
it's an opportunity that's available in the law, and the board's discretion, whether based on the date of the crime, that rather than 6 months, is he not?
You can't, no, it's in 1980.
Oh, did I pick the wrong date? Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize then. Did I do it wrong? That's why we have the board. Okay, so there will not be, sir. That's my mistake. So I did have it wrong. So there will not be, sir. It will be 6 months. It will be 6 months. That was my mistake, and I apologize. So Mr. Dalbush will be certified again by the Department of Corrections in approximately 6 months to come back before this board. And I want to thank Ms. Thomas, Ms. Raymond, for being here, and also Mr. Jones and Mr. Good for being here today. And our prosecutor as well. Thank you for coming. And Mr. Dalbush, this will conclude your hearing. And we'll see you again in about 6 months, sir.
Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Thank you, sir. And this will end the hearing. Thank you.
Thank you.